All right. Good morning, everybody. Look at Jack's hat. He's so proud of this thing. I'm thrilled you like it. It's a little gift I gave him.
I absolutely love it. Look at this.
Make South Africa great again.
AKA Msaga. Yes, sir.
And don't you think Msaga sounds like it should be a South African word?
It really should. Right? It really should. Yeah. Like from now on, when someone does something absolutely great, which is, yeah, that's Msaga, man.
And it's got a tone that could only be South African, Msaga.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds like Mhlaba. You know, it's like it's something slightly violent, like we want it to happen quite badly.
It's got a ominous but great thing about it, right?
Msaga.
Msaga.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah,
I like that.
Make South Africa great again. If you never hear a word I say for the rest of your life, remember these five words. Make South Africa great again.
That's going to be your theme going forward, right? That's
yes,
your thing.
Sir.
That's Jack's thing. All right.
Let's get it.
You did the Donald Trump move there, which is funny because this is what Bill Maher calls his two-dick move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes like this sometimes, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And Bill Maher, who I love. Oh, my God. I must quickly tell you something. So I was listening to my usual range of podcasts while I was doing stuff yesterday, at the gym and all the rest of it. He had an interview with Billy Dee Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Lando Calrissian from Star Wars.
Yes.
Superb guy. I mean, like easily one of the like great actors of Hollywood.
Yeah. And that voice is inescapable. Like,
yeah, I love him, right? And you know, he had a record contract once.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
I can believe that.
So anyway, Billy Dee Williams turns out to be one of those amazing people. I can tell you who they are. It's him. It's Robert De Niro. It's the late Prince Philip. And maybe there are a couple of other ones that I've forgotten. I think maybe Charlton Heston used to be in that crew.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen Denzel Washington do the same thing, where they have figured out they're so good at being in front of cameras and in front of microphones that they have made it very difficult to interview them.
Mm.
They are contrary on purpose.
Yeah.
So you say, yeah, tell me about a bit about your life. And then they'll go, well, you know, I've had a lot of really interesting experiences and I've had a very good time. Yeah, but acting isn't always a good time. No, yes, it is.
You know, so like,
as soon as you say X, they will say Y.
Why? Yeah.
And I heard for the first time ever, and this just kind of humbled me at the same time as making me laugh, because interviewing people is something that I have done for a long time and I've picked up a couple of skills.
Mm-hmm.
But here I heard Bill Maher just floundering with Billy Dee Williams. Billy Dee Williams just had him over a barrel. It was like, you know what? Here's this guy who I think has interviewed them all. He's got a good sense of humor. He's a stand-up comedian, Bill Maher. So he can do anything on stage. And he knows his ability. He's good at making people, putting people at ease and also putting them on the spot. Well, I mean, Billy Dee Williams just makes an absolute.
There's always that one guy.
So
right?
Rocky for him. It was such a bad interview. Even for Bill, that I had to listen the whole way through. I just had to listen to it.
It's so bad I can't watch.
It did nothing to my opinion of Billy Dee Williams, who I love.
Yeah.
But it kind of just made Bill look really ordinary and human for the first time in ages. So it was a good one to listen to. He's got this interview show he does called Club Random.
Yeah.
Where he sits and interviews famous people, but he talks to them about everything except politics. I mean, politics sometimes comes up. You can't avoid
it. Sure, you can't. But, it also depends on the guest, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny, like Billy Dee Williams, because, you know, Bill makes all these jokes about like, yeah, you must have got so much pussy in your day and all this. Billy Dee Williams goes, what a crude and vulgar thing to say. And you see Bill's like, what have I done now?
Like all the face, the blood in his face. Just
all his usual, because I've heard Bill Maher do it a lot of interviews, so I know what he's all about, you know, which kind of angles he takes. He was just stuck. Didn't know what to do, the guy.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And it's kind of fun to see that there are still people in the world who can do that. Right.
Right. And like, there's this joke that Eddie Griffin once said that I keep in mind all the time. It's like, you thought you were Billy Badass. until you ran into Billy Badass.
Uh-huh.
Billy Badass whooped that ass, and you figured out, I'm good at math.
I love that.
So Billy D. Williams is Billy Badass. He's
Billy Badass. Mm-hmm. That's so good. I love it. No. Very, very cool. And what an interesting interview. Anyway, so you're wearing the Make South Africa Great Again hat, which we are... Yeah, I'm gonna put them online for sale at some point because I know a lot of people want them.
Yes, sir.
I'm hoping we can do that before the election, but otherwise they will be available at some point. So anybody who's interested, keep an eye out. We'll get those to you.
Yeah, and I'm planning on wearing this the whole day.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's yours. You can do
rain,
what you want.
Rain or shine.
There will be. I'm just warning you in advance. There will be people who do not like that hat, and just like in America, that you know, the minute you wear that. They assume a lot about you. They assume that you're a Trump supporter. And that's why I made them, because I think in South Africa, we don't really have those. People actually really like Donald Trump in Africa.
Yes,
this is the funny thing that Democrats hate to admit.
Mm-hmm.
So like black people in Africa, what they know about America is a whole lot of weird and disparate things. But they know that if you think about the ultimate American, most black Africans will say Donald Trump.
Yep.
Which may piss off people on the East and West Coast.
But we don't care.
Who think we might say a name like Gore Vidal or, you know, Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. But they won't. They'll say Donald Trump.
Yeah.
To most South Africans, Africans, black Africans, people across the world, in fact, outside of America, they will say Donald Trump if you ask them for a quintessential
and it's
American.
It's crazy. Like... That what you just said would not have been a point of contention up until he ran for president. Everyone loved Donald Trump just up until he ran for president.
Yeah.
Which is so strange.
Remember like Don King was his best friend. I remember someone sent me a clip of him defending Michael Jackson when everyone else was climbing into my... He said, I don't know. A lot of people are saying the most terrible things about me and they don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have said terrible things about Michael Jackson, but I'll tell you, he's a sweet guy.
He's a sweet guy.
I've never had a problem where he spent a lot of time with us at Mar-a-Lago. He spent a lot of time with me in New York. He's a good guy.
He likes my gold toilet.
He likes my gold.
He thinks it's shiny.
Yeah, Michael did.
Yeah.
But then suddenly he ran for president.
And then all of a sudden he's
non grata.
Like, what the hell just happened?
Mm.
And I think... He brought a lot of ill feelings to the surface. A lot of things were kind of bubbling under in the States. And, you know, he showed up and he was like, okay, guys, there's a flip side to this coin.
Again, like what you got to realize is that people love to project a whole lot of their shit onto you. Mm. And that's why when you wear a hat like that or you wear a T-shirt with some kind of writing on it, and I steadfastly avoid wearing anything with any brand label or anything on it.
Yeah.
I've tried that for the last, I don't know, 10 years. You're not going to find a picture of me with writing on it.
Mm.
And not because I've got some worry that I'm supporting some shitty brand or anything. Like, you know, a lot of millennials, people will go, oh, no, we can't support this brand because they exploit animals.
Or, right.
You know, they make their shirts in a Chinese sweatshop or something. I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah.
For me, it's about, I'm not going to be your billboard.
That's it.
And the funny thing is that a lot of people want to project stuff onto others. And they also want stuff projected onto them.
Mm.
They want to be associated with this, but not with that.
Mm.
I'm like, a lot of this stuff you're not going to get out of just looking at someone's hat. You might have to actually ask them some questions.
Not at all. I mean, at the end of the day...
It's a lot of work.
Like... For whatever reason, because we live in the, 30-second attention span, people think that you can wrap up an individual as far as what they think and feel in 30 seconds. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It is not going to happen. In fact, I've got a couple of words for those people that might walk up to me today and be on some door. Why are you wearing that hat? We're going to have a chat, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there will be.
Yes.
There'll be someone who needs to deal with your problematic outfit.
Including the head.
There are people who genuinely think that their purpose in life, and these, by the way, are the worst people, the ones who want to rebrainwash you. because your brainwashing didn't work the first time. So they've got to fix you.
And it's like we are some monolith. Like all of us are supposed to think the same way. Like God forbid someone comes up with something new. Like what the hell?
Especially, and you get a lot of this shit. And someone's brought up Coleman Hughes in the comments here, which we'll talk about in a second. But, you know, the minute, and Penwell was here talking about this with me the other night too. The minute you are a young black person and you don't toe the normal middle of the road line, you're not like a fan of Panyaza Lesufi or the ANC, or you're not some left winger. They're like, what the hell? In fact, Penwell actually tweeted about that.
Yeah.
And I commented on it and said to him, you know, I know by me even commenting on this is going to cause even more shit for you, but well done.
Yeah. I mean, it's
and not because you agree with me, because you're brave enough to say what you actually think instead of what everybody else wants you to think.
Thank you.
Right?
And it's funny how a lot of people say some of these things because they want to be on the right side of history. Well
they just want to be
living in the present.
Popular.
That's the problem.
They think everybody will like them, and secretly all they want is acceptance. It's not that they want to be respected for their opinions or that they even have opinions. They choose the most popular point of view.
Right.
And they espouse that because they hope it will in turn make them popular.
Because
they wear a hat because they think it'll make them popular.
Mm.
They wear a certain brand because they hope someone will love them.
And it's
maybe if I buy that Gucci belt, someone will love me finally.
It's ridiculous. All of this shit starts from the inside, man. Like, the reason I can say what I want, think how I want, wear whatever hat I want to wear is because I do this weird thing that human beings used to do. It's called thinking.
Oh,
and no,
it's very dangerous.
And you know, I'm so proud of the fact that I can do that.
Listen, got to tell you two quick things. First of all, because one is in the news. Remind me, Marcus Huerster, we got to talk about that in a second.
But yeah.
I drove here this morning in a friend of mine's old 1995 Land Rover Defender.
Yeah, I saw it this morning. Yeah.
Yes, this thing, like you can go max 110 kilometers. An hour, okay?
Yeah.
And in these conditions this morning, I mean, there's no aircon. There's no, your windscreen wipers are this big. It's ridiculous.
Mm.
I love driving this car though, because I'm actually in the market for one, to be perfectly honest. So that's why I'm testing it out. And this friend of mine's got like five of them, and he said, come and try this one.
Right.
I'm doing the different kinds. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this thing, the window is steaming up so badly because it doesn't have any kind of internal. All you have is a vent that you open and it lets the air in, and some of the rain as well.
Oh, wow.
That's all you've got?
This is proper old school.
Oh, dude.
Mm.
It sounds like a tractor.
Yeah.
And the bright lights are about as bright as my torch on my iPhone. It is, you're sitting very high up.
Yeah.
He hasn't touched the inside of it. So
at all.
The original, no, there's no souping up of anything. Mechanically, it's fine.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome car and I'm loving driving it. I really am.
Mm.
But this thing, it was treacherous this morning.
Yeah.
It was the most treacherous drive I've had in ages. And I thought yesterday was tough. We spoke about this with Leanne because it's bucketing down.
Yes,
anybody who doesn't know, Joburg has basically become a tropical rainforest in the last 2 days.
Yeah, it's somehow mutated into London somehow. I don't know.
No, worse. It's monsoon.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. And you know that the car you're talking about, like, I feel like if more people from this generation got an understanding of those kind of cars, they'd realize just how far we've come as a human species.
The thing I love about them, since we're talking about it, is that they are mechanical.
Yep.
They are not electronic.
Mm-mm.
So some light doesn't come on. I mean, I don't even know what lights are coming on half the time. And maybe I should be worried about some of them. But it's a mechanical vehicle.
Yeah.
It's not something that's run by a computer.
Mm-mm.
They don't plug diagnostics into it. You have to actually open the hood, get in there,
and
smack it with a spanner.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of like that. That maybe because I'm developing an appreciation for older things, and I've always had an appreciation for older things, but also for things that, for real workhorses.
Yeah.
For stuff. There was that brilliant speech that Kennedy made before they went to the moon, I think in 1962. He said, We do these and the other things not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they wanted to go to the moon.
Yep.
Because it would have been easier to just say, ah, let's not go to the moon.
Yeah.
What do we need to do that
for? Let Russia do that.
Yeah, let Russia win the space race. It's not a big deal. But man, once you set that goal, you've got to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to discover all of the things that you'll need to propel you into space, to get you to orbit around that hunk of rock.
Yep.
And you've got to land on it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got to get the people back from it.
Safely.
So we've got to do hard things
again. We have to.
We really have to. So this is interesting. And we'll get to the politics just now. Remind me, Marcus Huerta.
Marcus Huerta, yeah.
Because it's bizarre.
Well, it's the first headline, so we'll get into that.
Patrick says, R.W. Johnson, who is actually, he's proven to be one of the most insightful of all of South Africa's analysts. Every time I turn on the TV, I see some new analyst.
He's got no track record.
He's got no track record. I see them talking the biggest heap of shit, and I'm like, okay, obviously this show, the producers of the show just needed someone to fill that seat.
Mm.
So they found someone who studied political science in 1983, and they called them up, and their phone worked.
Yeah.
And they said, can you get to the studio, or can you sit in front of a camera? And this is how, because these people add no value. Today, we have someone who really does add value coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I've been keen to have her in the studio for some time. Lorenza Eckhart, who does a show on CakeNet, which is an actuality show, and she's been a journalist for some 10 years or more, and interviews some amazing people. So she's got some insights that I think will be very valuable.
Yeah.
But I keep seeing people on South African television, and I think, how the hell, and even on radio, I suppose, because I don't listen, but I'm sure they end up there as well. How the hell did you get to a point where anyone was interested in your analysis? Because R.W. Johnson, who's in the comments here with Patrick, says a bunch of stuff, but it turns out he's very good at getting the numbers exactly right.
Dead right, yeah.
So Congo Chris and Patrick say R.W. Johnson gives MK 36%
in KZN
and 13% for the ANC. Yes.
That is very interesting.
And I suppose he means nationally MK 11%.
Yeah.
That would be a phenomenal result for a party that nobody really knows anything about except Jacob Zuma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing. We know nothing about MK.
Yeah.
Do you?
Nope. All I know is that they're in court right now.
Did you see any of that, by the way?
I saw a couple of clips on X, and I read the article on Daily Maverick. So they dropped the article at like midnight. And
saw my two lawyers going at each other.
Yes, those gentlemen. Those guys are so cool.
When I say my two lawyers, I mean Dalim Pofu and Thembeka Ngugayithobi, who both represented me in my case against Mnet when we won and beat the fuck out of them. I'm just going to keep reminding people. We beat them. We humiliated them.
Yes.
They had 14 lawyers and Wim Trengrove and me and Thembeka and Dali and Eric Mabuza.
Yes, sir.
We took them on and we won.
And it was established as part of public record that Gareth Cliff is, in fact, not a racist.
Yeah, in fact, if you call me that, you can go to jail.
Defamation of character.
I'm the only person in the country who you can, if you call me a racist, I could actually just tell. Well, I don't have to do anything. I just have to tell the sheriff of the court or, you know.
And this guy is casting aspersions over here.
Right, because it's in the record now.
Yes, it is.
Hilarious. I mean, if there was ever an unforeseen consequence of that case, it was that. But anyway, I'm...
So in this case, your lawyers are up against one another.
Mm.
And I think what I got from it, like, I don't want to go into the nitty-gritties of Section 19 and law, whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to understand is the precedent that will be set if Jacob Zuma wins this court case.
It would mean criminals are able to stand for president.
Correct.
Now, that was not an issue in ancient Rome.
Mm.
For all those people who are purists, let me remind you that there were many people in the Senate in Rome, and there were people who ran for consul during the Republic.
Yeah.
And there were many emperors after the Republic who did not even stand for election, but were openly criminal.
Yep.
We know they committed horrendous and heinous crimes, everything from, you know, white collar stuff to murders, and rapes, and horrible things.
So that's the question I walk away with is what type of future are we headed towards? Are we going to be the country of second chances? Like if you were behind bars and you have been rehabilitated somehow,
aren't
that
we
you
already
possibly
Tony Mangani, Shabir Sheikh.
Ah, but
aren't we already?
But we're talking about the president of the country, Gareth. We can't have a former convict as the president of the country.
Well, so I heard Tembaga, he was arguing exactly this. He said he is a criminal because that is what the courts declared him to be.
Thank you. And he did it knowingly, by the way.
Put him into jail. And as a criminal, our constitution says you cannot be president. Case closed, as far as I'm concerned.
And
Tembaga Ngukai Thobi is, I mean, I kind of had forgotten how erudite the man is. He puts a very good show together in court.
Yeah,
and I saw Dali got into a bit of a scrap with the judges because they said body language matters.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of, while one of the female judges was talking to him, he raised his shoulders and grabbed his file and started looking through papers almost as a distraction.
Yeah.
So that he wasn't listening to her. And that the other judge, I think the senior of the judges, said, Mr. Mbofu, please listen to the question before you start rummaging around in your notes.
Yeah.
It's very rude.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit of a reprimand. So it's not going well for him at this point, from what I could tell.
Yep. And I mean, look, that's what the law is about, right? You get two people who are on different sides of the argument, and whoever puts the best argument forward wins.
Yeah.
That's
what a court's meant to do. Provide you with the ability to do that.
Right. The ripple effect of it, as I said, the precedent that will be set. I'm not too happy about it. So I think they need to apply it equally, though.
Yeah, but this is not the constitutional court.
Right.
And in order to change the law, because the law is, as Tembeka said, it's fairly clear. It's like you can't be president if you are a criminal.
So shout out Gayton.
Can't run for president if you're a criminal.
Gayton.
Yeah, of course. Mm. This is a big problem for him, but he's unlikely to win, and so is Jacob Zuma. So are they allowed to at least run? Who knows? This is what they're going to decide. But they're not going to change the law in this respect.
Mm-hmm.
All they will do is enforce the law. That's what the judiciary is there to do. They don't interpret the law. They don't activate. They don't become activist judges and change the law.
We would hope not. Yeah.
Well, we don't have that. We don't have that problem that America has in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, ultimately, we'll see what happens. I mean, the 29th of May, I understand, is what, 49 days away from now? And we are just around the corner. Time will tell. I'm just hoping that, because I mean, when Jacob Zuma was arrested, this country kind of went bellies up. I hope that doesn't happen this time around. Like, whatever the courts say, like, Jacob Zuma needs to let his people know that what the courts say stands.
Or let them behave badly, and then we know what we're up against as a nation. They declare themselves outlaws, and they become like Robin Hood and his band of thieves, and that's what we have to deal with. Ah. Again, there are precedents for all of this in history.
Then we'll see.
Robin Hood may not be the best precedent for it, but there are many examples of people who have got a mob on their side and kind of tried to force the country to accept them. I don't think that's going to go down. It didn't work the last time.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's just hope we've got a bit more sense this time around.
So we've got a busy day today. Apparently, and I don't know if you've ended up in these conversations. It happened to me yesterday again. A lot of people don't believe Marcus Joost is dead.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I just accepted that this guy had shot himself on the beach in Hermanus. People are saying, oh, it's chicken blood. Where's the funeral?
Yeah.
Because, of course, now everything gives rise to conspiracy theory. We discussed this the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a widespread opinion that people think that he's not dead and that he's done a... Because also, they said this about old Gavin Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Mm.
Now, I don't know if anyone spotted Gavin Watson around.
I haven't.
As far as I know, he's still dead.
Yep.
And you would think by now, I mean, they spotted Tabobesta and Nandi in Sandton City. Was Gavin in some tropical forest somewhere where no one will find him, in Senegal or in Guatemala? Or, and if he is, he may as well be dead. That's some way to live.
Mm.
Where can you go in the world where you could be totally anonymous?
I wonder.
Especially if you've been in the news. If you,
yeah.
You know, Marcus Huerster was in international news. He was being prosecuted in Germany and in South Africa, so he couldn't really go to Europe.
Mm.
Sure, money can buy you a lot of things, but it cannot buy you complete anonymity.
Sure.
The more you have, the less likely you are to be anonymous and immune to prosecution.
Unless you've got the kind of money where you could buy yourself an island. And but you,
even though, I mean, like, Epstein had an island.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to him?
Yeah, well.
Did he kill himself? Where is Epstein? Has anyone spotted him?
See, that's another one. The thing is, I think the reason why people are coming up with these conspiracy theories is because there's a couple of people who died conveniently. Let me put it that way. Like, right when they were supposed to fall on their sword, that's when they disappeared. I think it's the timing of everything that makes it a bit questionable.
This is not a complicated one to me. He was about to go to jail for the rest of his life.
Yes, sir.
They were about to close in on him.
Mm.
It was like the day. The Hawks were preparing, as far as I understand, that week to arrest him.
Mm.
So he was looking at the cards that he's been dealt, and he thought, I've been a crooked son of a bitch, which he was.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming for me. There's no more hiding. I can't get away. The only way out is the gun.
Yeah.
I'm going to go down to the beach where I can have a nice view and blow my brains out.
You know,
it wouldn't be, is that really so outlandish to most people?
Not at all.
Suicide is a big thing in this country for people who have far less problems than Marcus Huerster.
Mm.
There are people who are dealing with, you know, a bill for like their car repayments or something.
Yeah.
And they go, well, it's too much for me. I'm going to take my life. That happens every day.
Yes, it does.
There are people who, you know, their girlfriend breaks up with them and they go and kill themselves.
Or they find out they've been raising someone else's child.
This happens. These are serious things, but people kill themselves over unserious things. So you really think that Marcus Huerster would have been one of the people at the top of the list of unserious things?
He had
serious shit heading his way.
Yes, he did.
And also by then, he's embarrassed his family. His kids must have been humiliated to say that was their father. The wife wanted nothing to do with him. The girlfriend, by the way, the former lover, Berdine Uerdendahl, is trying to access money. She didn't wait very long, did she?
No, she didn't.
She has applied for leave to appeal before the Supreme Court of Appeal after already losing two court bids. She wants the court to compel the central bank, that's the Reserve Bank, obviously, to continue paying her 150,000 rand a month for living expenses from her blocked accounts. 150,000 rand a month.
What? Where does she live for 150,000 rand a month? Like, what is going on?
I got to ask you, I know families of 5 and 6,
yeah.
You know? Mom and dad and a whole bunch of kids, and they are able to live on a quarter of that.
Yep.
In fact, a fifth of that, maybe even less.
Mm.
And they manage. So how is she, what is she doing for 150 grand a month?
Like, what is she paying
for? That's just her living expenses. Those are not over and above. So she's got a hell of a lifestyle anyway.
She does.
They've attached 4 of the bank accounts, including a Nedbank account belonging to her back in 2021. They raised some suspicion about a 60 million rand loan she had received from a horse racing company. 60 million rand. That's not suspicious at all. Horse racing company. She was paid a series of monthly installments of 150,000 already. These payments for her living expenses ran from July 21 until March 22. The Saab ceased payments when she demanded they also release funds to cover legal costs, labeling it a repudiation of the agreement. Poor her. I don't feel sorry for her at all. Anyway,
not in the slightest.
As I was saying, this guy didn't have a lot to live for.
Yeah, I think, look, people look at all the elements that come together about this thing. Like, over the years, we've seen a lot of very wealthy people get away with a lot. So I can see why people might lend themselves to some of these conspiracies. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's anything it's like it, it's true or whatever, but I can understand why someone might think to themselves, hey, you know what? Perhaps there is this little island where some of these scoundrels run off to, you know? And because we're so prone to seeing evidence these days, someone was waiting for the picture to trend of him with his head blown out. And then everyone will be like, yeah, there it is.
We want the grisly autopsy details, yeah.
Yes,
right?
We do.
We want all of that. We're not satisfied. Yep. And even then people will say it's staged.
Because, I mean, till this day, some people still believe that Tupac's still alive.
Of course.
You know.
And Elvis.
Elvis and all of this other stuff. So, yeah,
John Lennon.
Hey, man.
Congo Chris says, talking about rules for thee and not for me, Zuma's argument is that he only served 3 months of his 15-month sentence. Section 47 excludes anyone with more than a 12-month sentence from participating for 5 years.
Here's the problem. The sentence. His sentence was 15 months. The fact that he served three does not change the sentence.
Interesting. That's a very good distinction. Tracy says this is what dictators do. They change the rules either to stay in or get to power. Classic Zuma, he killed the scorpions to save his own. Well, he did that.
Mm-hmm.
Would love to know where this crook is getting money for all this bullshit fucking biggest thieves trying to run this country. Well, Daryl, you got to calm down for starters.
Yeah, that was quite violent.
I want to know, James, our producer, showed me a picture of the biggest EFF billboard. And I drove through Alex yesterday. And there's a mural. Right near the Alex Mall. Of Julius. But James sent me the biggest billboard on near William Nicol on the highway.
Okay.
Huge big billboard for the EFF. They are whoever's paying for their campaign
is spending big bucks.
I have seen a fortune of EFF advertising, but we're talking they must have hundreds of millions of rands to spend. And I wonder who's giving it to them. It can't just be their cigarette friends.
Yeah.
Or is it?
Possible.
I always want to know, and you can tell these guys are spending, right? And you can see that they're not shy to spend money.
Yeah, but wasn't it said that they have to tell us where they're getting this money? I could be wrong.
They are meant to tell us where they're getting the money, but I think they you know, we'll only find out about this money in 6 to 8 months or so.
Yeah.
So this is money that they're getting right now. They'll have to report to Parliament what their funding is and all this sort of shit. But I am just blown away. So look here, it's a terrible picture, but James was driving. That thing is really big. You can't see it from the picture, but there's some big billboards all over this country at the moment. I've seen ANC ones, EFF ones.
Yep.
I've seen a lot of Rise Mzansi. I haven't seen a lot of others.
Yeah.
I saw the Freys Front Plus. They've got an electronic billboard in Midrand.
I haven't seen one of those at all.
Yeah. And it also, whatever's being advertised in your neighborhood tells you a hell of a lot.
Yeah,
too,
it does. It does.
Because why would a party that has no chance in your neighborhood be advertising there if they didn't have a chance?
Right.
So you think you're in a neighborhood that votes a certain way. Meanwhile, the politicians have done their research.
Yes, they have.
They're going to try and win in that neighborhood. It's interesting.
Yep.
All right. Anyone hear that leaked clip of Gayton saying he wants to form a majority coalition with the ANC after these elections? He said so on the show. Gayton McKenzie has said, in no uncertain terms on this show with us, he will ally with whoever he needs to in order to achieve power. And to some people, that is the reason they won't vote for him.
You see, this is why I don't understand why it became such a big hullabaloo. Because it's like, he said this on numerous occasions. Like, he even said it on the Burning Platform, which was the first time I heard him say it. So it's like, why is this news? Or are we being distracted from something while something else happens? It's like, why? What are we talking about, actually? It's so annoying to me how the most crucial news of the day is overlooked for something stupid like Gayton saying what Gayton has repeatedly said.
Yeah, it's not. Is this like, really a surprise to anybody?
I'm not surprised at all.
I'm never surprised by any politician who will do anything they can for power.
Yeah.
I think that's the business they're in.
That's it.
So What, you suddenly want Mother Teresa to run for president?
Oh, my goodness.
What, you want the lady who runs the outreach program in, you know, the poorest township in South Africa? You think she's going to suddenly get up and decide to run for president?
It's not going to happen.
The kind of person who wants to be president has an ego which should immediately preclude them from being president.
There you go.
But you, that's not how it works.
It's not.
You know, people always go, you know, a lot of CEOs are like, they're monsters. They're psychopaths. They're narcissists. And I go, well, that's because the meek and mild shall not inherit the earth. Not while I'm around. I mean, as far as I can tell, those people are doing great stuff sometimes, and sometimes they're doing nothing at all.
Yep.
But they're not going to put themselves out there to run for president because they don't have the balls.
They don't. And it then begs the question, when people make those kind of statements, it's like, do you understand what goes into being a CEO or what goes into being a president?
No.
Which is why, like, a couple of people were on my ass about how we treated Mpo last week, Tuesday. Mpo Dagada, yes. Who was in the studio with us.
Why? Were we horrible to him?
Yeah. My friend was like, you guys were horrible to him. Why would you do that? I'm like, dude, if he cannot handle two people in the studio, he shouldn't be running for president. It's that. And my friend was like, yeah, you guys went a little hard on him as far as the land question was concerned. And I'm like, yeah, because he couldn't explain it simply.
He hadn't thought about it at all.
I don't think so. And, you know, my friend pointed out, look, dude, Julius has already kind of covered the land issue. He's explained it very articulately. And I was like,
he's changing his position on land, moderating it ever so slightly. That and nationalism. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I have. All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, if you cannot explain something simply, you just don't understand it.
Yeah, you see, Arnold, yeah, this is the kind of stupid that passes for thoughtful in this country. Arnold, I don't know you. You might be a very nice human being, but this is the dumbest comment I've heard in my life. The gift of the givers should run this country.
I think, well, because they're a has to be sarcasm.
Because they're a charity that is good at logistics and handing out, you know, disaster relief. Now you want them to run the country? I think you've confused, again, the kind of people who go into politics and what politics is really about with what you wish it was about.
Yeah.
So that is, I mean, again, gift of givers undeniably do some good stuff.
Yes, they do.
I'm a little suspicious of their motives in some respect, but I'm allowed to be. You could be suspicious about Marcus Houston, whether or not he's dead.
Sure.
That's just really fucking stupid. There's also this comment from Juliana who says, I just want someone to spray paint Rolex watches and VBS on the Julius posters. That'll be funny. That would be funny.
That would be funny.
Only those who do not crave power are qualified to wield it. That was Plato. That's according to Congo Chris. Very, very smart. Now,
but can you imagine centuries ago this man said this?
Yeah, he knew this was right. And we know it's right. But the kind of person who does not crave power is just not going to. This is a famous Roman general called Marius, who was asked three times, like Christ was denied three times by Peter. Yeah. He was asked three times by the Roman Senate to help them during the Punic Wars, the wars against Carthage. Refused twice. The third time he eventually said, I got to do this for my country.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it, and then he immediately afterwards resigned.
Yeah.
From the dictatorial power that they'd given him. You know, Nelson Mandela was president for one term.
One term.
Handed over power.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he was reluctant to take that position, I don't think anyone would say he was.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he had a responsibility. Whether he thoroughly enjoyed the wielding of power, probably everybody who does in that position would.
Yeah.
But George Washington became president after fighting the War of Independence in America, first president of that country. Also, after his first term, laid down power, said, that's next. It. Who's next?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, with the fact that I can name three people from history who did that means that it is rare.
It is.
If there were more people, and you're welcome to bring them up in the comments, I'd love to see if you could think of any others. They don't exist.
They really don't.
I'm afraid they are very rare and very special people. It's not a likely scenario.
It really
isn't. In modern politics. In fact, a lot of our politicians now are so they're so blatantly looking for their egos to be soothed by a popular vote.
Yeah.
And by being popular and by being performative. In other words, pretending to be a leader rather than be a leader. Because leaders sometimes say unpopular things and take the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like they could see their popularity dropping, but they don't care because they feel they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they are, maybe they're not. Who knows? Again, a rare thing to find.
Very rare. I mean, even Uncle Posey said he'd step down after one term, but there he is.
He's still there and he's still running.
Still there. Mm-hmm. Still there. Just remember, make South Africa great again.
And Slippery Pickle, while we're talking about ancient Rome,
yeah,
and then we will move on because we've got Martin standing by to talk to us this morning. Slippery Pickle says, Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor, had a servant in his chariot whose job it was to whisper in his ear, you are but a man. Mm. So that actually was true for everyone who rode in triumph in ancient Rome on the Via Sacra, which is the road that leads up to the Capitoline Hill, where the temple of Jupiter Optimus Maximus was located. And they would ride on a two-wheeled chariot drawn by four horses, and they would have a laurel wreath held above their head, a wreath of bay leaves. Mm. And the person who was holding, the servant who held a slave usually, in fact, who held the bay leaf laurels above their head would whisper in them, because now they have the adulation of the crowds,
right,
their moment of triumph. Mm-hmm. That's where the word triumph comes from.
Mm.
Triumphal arch is what they would ride under.
Right.
It was the greatest moment of public lauding that anyone could wish for.
Right.
And while this is happening, the slave was required to keep whispering, you are but a man.
You are but,
you
a,
are
man.
But a man.
Yep.
You are nothing.
Mm.
You are nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they would say to them.
It kind of feels like Cersei in Game of Thrones. Shame. Shame.
Yeah, there's a bit of that.
Yeah, a little bit. And I think we need to bring that a little bit more, not the slavery part, but like people being told that, hey, just remember, you are just a man. You are but a man.
This is why they end up in court fighting for whether or not they can run again. All right, it is time for the window seat with travel.co.za. Now, I've got to just remind everybody, one of the reasons we do this is because most of us are so busy. We plan one or two holidays a year, and we don't really have the time, put in the effort, necessarily even have the money to be able to do it properly. We try to expose you to a lot of the thinking inside of the travel industry.
Mm-hmm.
We try to expose you to a lot of the places and the things that you could do to make that really worthwhile. And we're doing it with TourVest, of course, and in this case, TourVest Destination Management, which is one of the divisions. And we're going to speak to the CEO there, Martin Viest, who's going to help us out with a bunch of things. But I also want to talk to him because he's the kind of guy who really knows a lot about tourism and about travel. And these are the things we want to expose ourselves to,
yep,
so that we don't make dumb decisions, so that we know a little bit, so that we seem like we can spend our money better, figure out some of the hacks that make it easier for us to travel with ease.
Yeah.
So here he is. He is the CEO of TourVest Destination Management, a member of the TourVest Holdings Executive Committee. He famously started his travel and tourism career as a driver. So you see, here's a guy who is not afraid of hard work, and here he is to join us this morning as the CEO. Martin, it's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm very good. It's early in the morning and it's raining and foggy where I am, but it's fantastic to be with you this morning. Thank you very much. And thank you for two things. Number one, to describe personalities of CEOs accurately, and for the free history lesson for this morning. So thanks for both of those.
Well, listen, I mean, it is true that you know, a certain kind of person is sometimes required to run things, and maybe they don't have all the qualities that you know, Mother Teresa would approve of, but they certainly aren't always an evil dictator either. It's people, it's managing people, and in a position like yours, it's also managing like a lot of expectations, pushing a business in a certain direction that requires energy, and it's a difficult thing to do. And tourism and travel, everybody thinks they know tourism and travel because they've been on a trip. But it's a bloody complicated industry. And when you get into the economics and you get into the people and you get into managing the destinations as you do, it's a hard job.
Yeah, and it's changing so rapidly. I mean, the arrival of the internet, I can't remember, 10, 15 years ago, and then with an accelerated impact in the tourism industry, it's changed our business dramatically. So the division I'm responsible for brings about 300,000 tourists a year to Africa. We've got offices in 7 countries on the African continent. We run just over 300 vehicles all over Africa. And the internet has changed our business dramatically. You know, Gareth, if last time you booked a holiday, the likelihood of you doing it on the internet is quite high. And what we have to do in the area that I'm responsible for is to convince our customer and to convince the consumer that actually dealing with human beings is still the better way of doing your travel than through a digital medium and a computer. And that's changed our life dramatically. It forced us to reinvent ourselves as a business. It actually forced us to go deeper and deeper into more and more complex destinations. So the latest destinations we added to our portfolio has been, for example, Madagascar, with Uganda. And we're busy with various countries in West Africa at the moment, where even Gareth won't go and go on come and book a day, and he'll need somebody to hold his hand. And so complexity is our friend, and service is our friend, and I think that's the important part here. So it's changed dramatically from the days where I was a bus driver. Thanks for reminding me of that.
There's nothing like an origin story, right? We want to know where Spider-Man came from. We want to know is it really true that you did start off as a bus driver?
Yeah, I mean, I could add to that. I studied totally the wrong thing. I thought I was genetically made to become an electrical engineer because my dad was one, and had a phenomenally poor academic record. And when I dropped out of university, I needed to take stock of what I knew. And I'm German, so I speak fluent German, and I speak fluent French. Well, then at least I spoke fluent French. And I knew the country quite well. So for the first 3 years of my life a tourist, I physically drove buses and gave commentary and acted as a tour guide.
That's bloody amazing.
That is pretty amazing.
You know, these days everybody thinks that they've got a cool story, but to rise to the top of a massive business like Tourvest Destination Management when you start off that way gives a lot of people hope. If you work hard, they say, you know, you'll get ahead, and then you get those negative people who say, no, there's always someone in the way making it impossible for you. You're like a living example of this. I like it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's hard work. I think sometimes there's also a bit of luck involved. You've got to have people that support you in an organization. But it's certainly time in the saddle and it's experience. But simultaneously, you've got to further your education. So whilst my first attempt at tertiary education wasn't that great, at least I had a few more successful events in my life doing that. And I must tell you, the first 3 years in a bus was amongst my favorite years in a bus. I still have a guide license today. I still have a public driving permit, and I still have a permit to drive buses. As a matter of fact, in 2010, when one of our drivers became ill during the FIFA World Cup project, I drove that bus back from the stadium. So I can still
die hard, man.
That's awesome. I love it. So you can be called on when there's bullshit going on.
When they shook hands a little bit, yeah.
What does TDM, Tourvest Destination Management, actually do? What are you guys responsible for, and what is your core business?
I'm gonna try and summarize it briefly because it's quite complex. So firstly, we operate in Namibia and Botswana and South Africa, in Mozambique and Madagascar, in Zanzibar, in Kenya and Tanzania, Uganda, and soon in West Africa. So those are our areas of operations. Our key business, we've got two core businesses. The one is we call inbound leisure, so people coming inbound. Our main markets are in Europe and the United States. We, as I said earlier on, do about between all those countries between 300,000 and 400,000 passengers a year. That are people from United States and Europe that are having a holiday in Europe, and we do for them whatever they require. So it's either creating a soft-off itinerary with all the bookings that they need, or we take them on one of our vehicles, and our vehicles are highly diverse. We're running these, I don't know if you've been to the Serengeti, we're running over 100 pop-up vehicles in the Serengeti, where the pops up for photography. I don't know if you've seen our overland adventure trucks, they're called Drifters. Around Joburg, but I really run across Africa, and you go camping across Africa. It's an amazing product. We run a fleet of Quantums here, and we take overseas tourists on tours through South Africa, buses in Namibia, etc. So that's our one core business. The second core business is Sports travel and tourist is attached to tourist destination management. And we have two key businesses. The one is called Pure Travel, and we take South Africans skiing. We take South Africans to Formula One, and we take South Africans to Wimbledon. And last but not least, one of the businesses we're particularly proud of is SA Rugby Travel. It's a joint venture with SARU, and we do anything to do with the Springboks. So we do Cape Town Sevens. We took just over 5,000 people to France for the Rugby World Cup in France. We do stuff like that. So sports travel and inbound leisure is sort of my daily bread, and it's an amazing place to be.
So apparently you got this Indaba happening in 2024. Where is that, and what does it involve? Who all goes to this thing?
You know, guys, it's an interesting story. So this is my personal 34th Indaba. So Indaba is the travel show piece of South Africa. And of course it was invented in the mid-80s, very long before internet or mobile telephone was invented or any of that. So the only way that you could deal with your customer was around a table, which, by the way, I still much prefer than, and I'm really sad that I couldn't make it to the studio this morning because I prefer face-to-face.
Hey, listen, this rain, you saved yourself some trouble.
100%. So Travel Indaba has been around since the mid-80s, and it is, in essence, is supposed to put together distribution, product, and customer from overseas. So the customers would be the wholesalers that put brochures together, put product of South Africa together. It happens in the second week of May. The first Indaba that I attended, believe it or not, was at the Riverside Holiday Inn in Van der Bijl Park. There were six of us that exhibited, and there was 20 buyers. So there was 26 of us altogether that fitted into the hotel. I'm guessing with a number of exhibitors. My guess is we have somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 exhibitors now. We have between 10,000 and 15,000 buyers now. So Indaba has come a very long way since my very first one at the Holiday Inn in Van der Bijl Park.
Jeez, that's an incredible story, and shows you how things develop over time. And also you start off thinking, this is very small. Before you know it, it's like become a massive, massive thing. What is your forecast? Because it would be a waste of having you on and not asking you this, for the South African tourism industry in the next 2 years. There's a lot of excitement around what South Africa can offer, what we already offer, what we have the potential to offer. And there are people from all over the world who really love coming here, who've never been here before and want to come here. What do you think the overall forecast is?
So maybe if I frame it a little bit, I mean, South Africa, of course, sits in a competition with other African destinations, and it sits in a competition with global destination. And a lot of your question to me hinges around how well we are promoting our country overseas, how effective South African tourism is positioning our destination in the face of the consumer. Because at the end of the day, I can't do my job unless a consumer walks into a travel agency or a consumer goes into an online medium and specifically asks to travel to South Africa. And for that, we need a very strong consumer drive, and that's the function of South African tourism, and it needs to function well. The second component is, of course, comparative pricing. How competitive is South Africa as a destination? And so I guess over the last 4 or 5 years, and specifically since COVID, what has happened is on the African continent, so the African international traveler, the market share has shifted from south to east. So we've seen substantial growth, particularly in Kenya and in Tanzania, and specifically in Tanzania. Because they had different COVID policies to South Africa. They kept their tourism industry open during COVID. So we get on a clawback phase. This year we're growing back. We, as South Africa, we're not on 2019 level yet, whilst East Africa specifically has exceeded 2019 levels. And we're fighting for our market share. So if you ask me, South African tourism industry for the next 2 years, all things being equal, the rand staying weak, South African tourism getting their marketing strategies right, my view is that by the end of 2025, we should be back at 2019 levels and then have gradual growth from there, because excessive growth is impossible. We don't have the capacity in this country. Firstly, we don't have air capacity. I don't know if you've been on an aircraft lately. They're largely full.
Yeah.
So a full aircraft doesn't allow for more tourists to come, so it doesn't allow for tourism growth. So we need more air capacity to South Africa. We need more game lodge activity. We're already now running into problems for winter 2025 where you can't find availability in game lodges.
Really?
We need more coaches. We need more tour guides. You can't find German-speaking tour guides. There's not a week that goes past to close the circle that I don't get a phone call from somebody that clearly doesn't know what I do for a living, that doesn't want me to go and guide for them on a German-speaking tour, which I find always very humorous. And I'm always tempted to go on a nice German-speaking tour. We need promotion, and then we can outgrow where we are. Pardon me, Gareth.
No. You've just told us about a huge gap. So if there's someone who really wants to get into tourism, just do a German course, and you'll find a job easily.
Or Italian, or any of the languages that French, Italian, German would be a good departure point with a smithering of English thrown in.
Very good. I love it. Listen, Martin, very good to have you on, and thank you very much for sharing some of your expertise and your experience with us. It's really helpful to know these things. Also, for many of us who think that the tourism industry is so complicated, you helped to explain some of these nuances to us. Things like planes coming in, being full, and how we don't have capacity to grow exponentially. There are certain things that you've got to practically understand to know how much money the country can make out of tourism, and you've helped us understand that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think lastly, maybe if I can say, tourism has got the cunning ability to create jobs in the right way. And I know that you've had conversations with Mone, and Mone's business is very different from TTS. It's very different insofar as its call centers are in the big cities. What inbound leisure does, what tourist destination management does, that tourism happens in rural South Africa. It happens in the remote areas of South Africa. And hence, inbound tourism, and not only what tourist does, but what inbound tourism does, creates employment and creates job opportunities and creates entrepreneurial opportunities in rural South Africa, and inadvertently reverses some of the urbanization that we have that can't be healthy for the country. So for many, many, many reasons, tourism is a fantastic industry for a country and should deserve a better focus than it currently gets.
I like it. Thank you so much for helping us, and good luck to you and tourism destination management at Tourvest. Very good. Thank you, Martin Wiest, the CEO this morning, our guest. All right. We got Lorenza Eckhart joining us just now. We're going to talk some politics, democracy 101. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about the US and Americans staring at the sun.
Yeah. Going nuts about the eclipse.
You know, you'd think this is the first time a lot of these Americans have ever seen a solar eclipse. And sure, it's exciting and every one of them should be. It's a hell of a lot better than focusing on the Kardashians.
For sure.
But honestly, guys, if I have to see one more of the Americans I follow on social media posting a picture of themselves staring up at the sun, I'm going to lose my mind.
Interestingly enough.
Show us the sun. Show us with the, you know, the safety that we need to, because they're all wearing these funny goggles, and what you need. You don't look at the sun unless you're a moron. But show us that. I don't want to see you. This reaction video thing has been taken completely out of control.
Mm.
But I don't care enough about any human being's reaction. I may follow you for all kinds of stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not interested in seeing you looking at the sun. There is never a moment where watching you watching the sun is sufficiently interesting to me.
Definitely.
And I got 100 of these pictures.
Yeah. What's interesting is, I heard this from Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. So apparently when Christopher Columbus made it to the Americas, in a slick way to try get power over the people there, because he understood how planets and all that stuff works, he said, look, give me all of your stuff or in the next 2 days,
it'll go dark.
It'll go dark.
In the middle of the day.
There you go. And
by the way, their own leaders were doing this too. There's that brilliant Mel Gibson movie, Apocalypto.
Yes, sir.
Where they show the Aztecs in what would become Mexico City performing a similar ritual, and all the stupefied peasants.
Right.
This happened in Europe. It happened in India. It happened in America. It happened here in South Africa. Someone who knows that this is what happens when the earth passes in front of the sun.
Or at least the moon.
Sorry, when the moon passes between the sun and the earth.
There you go.
If you can figure that out, if you know how celestial bodies operate, and there was a fair amount of this evidence. I mean, the Aztecs were astronomers.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient Egyptians were astronomers. Ancient Indians were astronomers.
The Dogon as well.
All of those people. So
if
you understood this, then the stupefied peasants would go, oh,
there you go.
Magic. Just like they think Elvis is still alive.
Right.
Marcus Uster, or that Jacob Zuma wasn't a criminal. And stupefied peasants are still a big part of the world today.
Yeah. So the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Correct. All right. We'll be back with Democracy 101, another thing for stupefied peasants to talk about next.